And with that said, we're going to move to the first case. But before we do that, Judge Talman would like to make a statement.
Good afternoon, everybody. I wanted to point out to counsel that after I, or when I started reading the briefs in this case, I became aware that Karen Steinhauser was one of the trial attorneys for Mr. Mowdy in this case. And Ms. Steinhauser and I belong to the same synagogue, and she's also in a Havarah, a group of about 10 families that has regular activities together as part of what we do. And so I wanted to bring that to your attention. If either of you believes that I should recuse myself from the case for that reason, I will be happy to do so. What I would suggest is that we would give you 3 days to file any request that I recuse myself, unless, of course, you wanted to make that request immediately. And if you choose not to have me recuse myself, then I would participate in the case.
I have no current objection, Judge. Thank you. No objection, Judge.
Okay, thank you.
And I'd add that if within the 3 days either of you change your mind, which is certainly your prerogative, what we would do is we would find another judge to sit for Judge Talman, and that other judge would listen to the oral arguments today before consulting with us on the case. With that being said, if we could please proceed with People versus Gavin.
Good afternoon, Your Honors, and may it please the court. My name is Andrea Gammel, and I represent the appellant, Mr. Taylor Mowdy. Your Honors, CRIMP 41-1 establishes a procedure by which law enforcement may obtain a warrant to take a citizen into custody on less than probable cause for the limited purpose of obtaining non-testimonial identification evidence. That's what happened in this case. Police sought and were granted a warrant to take Mr. Mowdy into custody to obtain specifically buccal swabs for DNA purposes, fingerprints, and palm prints. Nothing else was included within the scope of the order. Under the rule, CRIMP 41-1, the collection procedures must be done as expeditiously as possible, and once they are completed, the suspect must be released or charged. In this case, police took Mr. Mowdy into custody. They went to his, and bear with me, this is a bit of a fact-based argument. They went to his dorm room. He was a freshman at CU, 7:45 in the morning, knock on the door. Roommate answers door, gets Mr. Mowdy up. They inform him, we have this warrant to collect this information from you, this evidence from you. They do a pat down, take him out into the police cruiser, place him in the back of the police cruiser. Police cruiser is typical. Police cruiser has no person in the back seat, cannot get out on their own. Transport him to the police station where they enter through the sally port, meaning the door goes up, you go in. It's not a public access to the police station. They escort him into a small interview room where they sit him down, and he's met by two detectives from the Douglas County Sheriff's Department. At that point, the Douglas County lead detective on the case is Detective Weaver. He comes in and tells Mr. Mowdy, look, here's, and it's fairly casual conversation at this point, here's what's going to happen. We're going to get this done real quick, just this evidence collection, and then we're going to have a chance to talk. And the problem starts, well, started before here, but the problem for Mr. Mowdy started here, because they suggested at the very outset that this custodial environment, that this encounter with the police was going to include some conversation at some point. What we also know is that the police had long intended to converse and have an interrogation of Mr. Mowdy at the time that they collected the 41-1 evidence. And we know this for several reasons. One, Detective Weaver testified to it. Yes, it was my intent to interrogate him after the procedure was over. They also, importantly, there were four 411s sought in connection with this case. Three of them were conducted at the homes of the suspects. But the affidavit in Mr. Mowdy's case specifically requested that he be taken into custody and transported to a police station where the evidence could be collected. Now, the CSI technician who did the evidence collection testified that she could have done the collection anywhere. So presumably the reason for taking him to the police station would be to have a more conducive environment for conducting and recording any interview that might happen.
Ms. Gamble, pardon me for interrupting.
Sure.
Let's assume for purposes of argument that we agree with you that he clearly was in custody when he was brought into the police station. The warrant, the 411 order allowed the police to do that.
Right.
Help me with this. After the evidence is collected, at some point one of the police officers says, "You're free to go." They return some items to him, including his cell phone. And I think if I recall my reading of the record correctly, they tell him that he's free to go at least twice. Is he, after they tell him free to go, A, still in custody, and B, under the 411 any longer?
I believe both. But the 411 was continuing because they had set this up. There was no clear break between the 411 collection procedures ending and this turning into something other than a non-custodial setting. And the reason for that is the evidence had been collected. The fingerprints, the palm prints were the last thing to be done. One of the detectives escorted Mr. Mowdy to the restroom to wash his hands and then brought him back down the hall. At this point, he had to have been released. The rule requires that he be released at this point, but he wasn't. They brought him back into the little interrogation room where they had done the collection procedures. At that point, they again did not say, "You're free to go, here's your phone, here's your ID." What the detective said was, "Well, you know, I'd still really like to talk to you." They kept pushing these, the 411, Mr. Mowdy had never been out of police custody or presence at this point. They were with him the entire time. They watched him in the bathroom. They watched him walk back. He never said, "We're done here. Why don't, you know, we have to let you go now because that's what the rule says. That's what our warrant actually allows us to do." They continued pressing the idea that they were going to question him.
Ms. Gamble, you said a few minutes ago there was no clear break. What would you envision would have had to have occurred for there to have been a clear break?
Well, certainly saying, "Well, we're finished with, you know, what the scope of the warrant covered, but we'd like to talk to you. Would you be willing to stay here and talk to us?" But they just kept pushing the agenda, and they had started the whole interrogation with the notion that they were going to talk at the end. So I think they needed to make it very clear at that point that they were done. He was totally free to go. And simply saying, "You're free to go," and then setting your phone and ID on the table was not a sufficient break in the detention to be clear that this was now a consensual encounter. Specifically also because they said, "Okay, here's your phone and your ID. We'll set it here on the table in case you want to go," and then prolonged the detention by asking them, "Well, would you mind just staying so we could take some photographs?" And Mr. Mowdy agreed, "You can come and take my photograph." Then the photographs were taken mugshot style, another trapping of custodial presence. And then after the photographs were taken, they came back in. Let me just review this real quick. Make sure I get this all correct. They came back in. Said again, we put your phone on the table. Why don't you give us a couple minutes before so we can go and get the photograph, the photograph woman ready?" And they said, "Don't start, we'll just wait." So they had him wait again. This is the point where the district court found that the break had happened, that they'd given him his things, that they left the room, and he was there by himself. The problem is that they had told him to wait while they went and did that. So again, not a clear break in, you can go, you're free to go, oh, but here, just wait while we go get the rest of this done. I think probably the biggest problem with why it was not at all clear to Mr. Mowdy that he was free to go happens when they come back in, and even the detective recognizes this is really looking like a custodial situation. I should probably read you your Miranda rights, and proceeds to advise Mr. Mowdy of his Miranda rights. This is peculiar because clearly Miranda is only triggered by a custodial situation. On the one hand, you have the officers telling him, you're free to go. On the second hand, they're giving him rights that only apply to people who are in custody. So I mean, a reasonable person in Mr. Mowdy's situation would think, custodial, the custody is continuing. I'm still here, I'm not free to go. Not only did they advise him of his Miranda rights, then they closed the door to the interview room and proceeded with this long interrogation. This is not a situation where Mr. Mowdy ever initiated any conversation with them. He barely spoke. His responses were like, okay, uh-huh, things like that. He never suggested, hey, I'd really like to talk to you. It was only after the fourth time that they had broached the subject of having an interview after they collected their evidence that Mr. Mowdy suggested that he was interested in knowing why they were talking to him. But he never said, I want to talk to you about it. He said, I'd like to know why I'm here, basically. So this is clearly a custodial situation. They Fourth Amendment violation on its face. He was not free to go. Miranda rights, door closed, and the totality of the circumstances reveal that he, a reasonable person, and certainly Mr. Mowdy, believed that he was in custody at this point, starting with the police cruiser ride into the police station, in the bowels of the police station, you know, interrogation procedures happening, evidence collection, buccal swabs, I mean, all the things that go along with custody, why he would have, or any reasonable person would have expected that somewhere along the way, this had terminated and turned into something other than the detention, which he had been advised he was in custody for, is not reasonable. He was under custody at this point, and the interrogation violated his Fourth Amendment right.
Ms. Gamble, I recall from the briefs that the police officers indicated like three or four times to Mr. Mowdy that we'd like to interview you if you would like to do so, or something to that effect. Does that have a bearing on the extent to which this was a voluntary encounter?
You know, I don't think so, because that's just their way of saying, if you'd like, you can hang around and we'll talk some more. But I think they need to make it clear to him that this is not part of the original detention. They had started from the get-go with this notion of, we're going to talk to you when it's over. Not that it's his idea. They're basically, they put words in his mouth several times. I mean, at the end they say, well, we're glad that you want to stay and talk to us. Well, he never said that I want to stay and talk to you. He was willing to receive information from them, but he wasn't interested in communicating with them necessarily. So I don't think that they couched it in those terms really changes the calculus here. I see I have 3.5 minutes. If there are no questions, I'll save my time for rebuttal.
Of course.
May it please the court, I'm Christine Brady, registration number 24779, representing the people. The trial court properly found that the Rule 41.1 limited detention ended and evolved into a consensual encounter before the police interview occurred. Thus, the trial court also properly found that the Harris factors do not apply in this case. The Harris factors only apply when questioning takes place during the execution of the 41.1 procedure. That didn't happen here. I mean, in Harris, they picked up the defendant. They had him in the car, transporting him to the hospital, so they hadn't yet even done any of the 41.1 procedures, and they started interrogating him right there in the car. The facts of this case are not like that at all. The trial court is correct that under the totality of the circumstances, the Rule 41.1 limited detention evolve into a consensual encounter when the detectives returned the defendant's ID and cell phone, similar to an investigative stop. The test is whether a reasonable person under the circumstances would believe that he was free to leave or disregard the officer's request for information. A significant factor is the return of the person's documentation. Here, he not only got his ID back, but he got his cell phone. I mean, he could have called somebody or he could have just picked up his stuff and left. Now, the defendant got his ID and cell phone back even before the photo was taken. The request for the photo was not part of the warrant, and he was told that he didn't have to stay and take the picture. As a matter of fact, would you mind if the technician comes back in to take a photo real quick? He says, no, that's fine. And they ask him again, that's okay? Okay, well, let me get her in here real quick. Then they hand him back his ID and his cell phone. They say, well, just put it on the table, so if you want to leave, we're going out now, we're going to leave the door open. A person knows he's free to go if the officer so informs him, and if the officer makes him feel comfortable. Both of those things happen here. If he chooses not to leave, but rather acquiesces in the officer's request to respond to some questions, it's a consensual interview. In regard to whether there was a clear break or not, I don't know that you need a clear break. I think it can evolve into a consensual interview because the issue does not turn on attenuation. It can follow immediately as long as there's no coercion, promises, or threats. And the record here doesn't show any of those three. The defendant is not in custody if he has asked, not told, to discuss an investigation. And if he's told, he is free to go at any time, which he was in this case. And it doesn't matter that the consensual encounter took place in a secured facility. That's not determinative. As long as nothing in the record suggests that the defendant wanted to leave and would not have been able to, he would not have been allowed to if he so wished.
Pardon me for interrupting, Ms. Brady.
Yes.
There's no question that he was in custody for purposes of the Rule 41-1.
That's correct.
Should it matter to us what the officer's intent was?
For purposes of a limited detention, it does not matter. When it evolves into a consensual interview, it does not matter.
So if the officers from the very beginning want to interrogate the person they're picking up on the 41-1, we shouldn't be bothered by that.
If they have a hope that after the 41.1 procedures have ended, that the defendant chooses to voluntarily speak with them, then we're not concerned about that. The idea about the pretext has to do with what happens during the 41.1, when they're using that limited detention, that time, to interrogate the defendant.
Ms. Brady, I didn't see any discussion in the briefs at all about the defendant's age. It was mentioned that he was a college freshman.
That's correct.
Does that bear at all on our analysis of whether he was subject to coercion, promises, or threats because of his age?
I don't think it does, Your Honor, because he was over 18. He was a college freshman, and he was not a minor. I think it even helps that they conducted the 41.1 on campus within walking distance of his dorm room. He knew how to get back there, and he knew he could leave that facility. Are there no further questions? Thank you.
Counsel, you have 3 minutes and 24 seconds.
Thank you.
The question of whether the intent of the officers matters, the answer is it absolutely does. That's the one of the first of the Harris factors, is whether the officers intended to interrogate the suspect under the guise of a 41-1. And here, all evidence shows that they absolutely intended to use this 41-1 procedure to interrogate Mr. Mowdy. And we know that. It doesn't appear in the district court's order specifically, but not only earlier, as I mentioned, that they asked to have the warrant executed at a police station, But they had discussed, Douglas County officers had discussed with CU about setting up an interview room for them. They asked about the recording equipment that they had in that interview room, and they were advised that they should bring their own recording equipment because the CU Police Department's system was in sort of a testing phase. We also know that the officers had talked to each other about how they were going to conduct the interview, who would be the lead interviewer, how they were going to work the show. The fact that they were planning on an interview absolutely matters to this court as a primary Harris factor. With respect to Judge Taubman's question about age, absolutely age matters. It's one of the totality of the circumstances. It's a reasonable person standard, but we have to look at the totality of the circumstances in this particular case. Mr. Mowdy was a young man, 18 years old. There was evidence in the record that showed up in the district court's order that the officers knew that he had lived a relatively sheltered life and that he was naive, and he would likely be compliant with their requests. They took advantage of this. They used the initial portion of their interview to do some rapport building with him. They used this to continue the custodial setting, the custodial environment, and did not make any indication to Mr. Mowdy that the procedures had ended when they were required to by the rule. I mean, they were required to release him. They did not. They kept pressing for the interview, and they got what they wanted, which was what they had intended. If there are no other questions, I would ask the court to reverse the district court's order and reverse Mr. Mowdy's convictions.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you both, counsel. We appreciate your arguments today very much. Thank you for coming. Please journey safely home. The case will now stand submitted, and an opinion will issue in due course.